Welcome to Run With It, Canada's running fitness and health program. On this month's episode, I was in conversation with Kim Vopney, who is a pelvic health specialist, and she shared her tips and bringing awareness to pelvic health. I'm excited to have back on the show Kim Vopney. She's a certified personal trainer, award-winning author, pelvic health specialist, and advocate. And she's here today to talk about pelvic health awareness and what you can do and share her expertise. Welcome back, Kim.
Thank you so much for having me. Nice to see you.
Yeah, likewise. You know, for people who have not watched the show or listened in, but what is pelvic health?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot. I hear from a lot of people that they don't really quite know, and they've heard the term being used a lot more in social media and in magazines, which is great. So awareness is increasing, but I still think that people aren't totally sure what it is and why they should really care or pay attention. So the pelvis, we all, whether you have male or female anatomy, we all have a pelvis, and it's made up of bones, and we have a sacrum, which is a triangular bone, and we have two ilium, which are kind of the hip bones, if you put your hands on your hips. And those, we have joints, like at the front, there's an intersection of our pubic joint, and as part of the sacrum and the ilium at the back, we have something called the SI joints, which anybody who's ever had low back pain probably has heard of SI joint pain. And the muscles that surround all like those bones and also close off the underneath part, the base of that, the base of our pelvis, are part of our pelvic floor and our core. So the pelvic floor is the base of the pelvis, and there's three different layers of muscles, and they support our internal organs. So I'm going to mainly focus on female anatomy because that's my area of focus. But again, men do have pelvic floors and they have internal organs, and we have some of the similar functions. Women, we have a uterus, so we have an additional organ, and we also have like a vaginal opening, which male people don't have. So we have the urethra, the vagina, and the anus, which are three openings that the pelvic floor plays a role in managing. So supporting the organs, managing those openings, and making sure that they can open when we want something to come out, for instance, when we pee, poo, or fart, or give birth. Also be able to allow something to come in with regards to insert of sex, and then keep them closed when we're going about our day and we don't want any of that to be happening. The pelvic floor also plays a role in our pelvic and spinal stability. So because it attaches to those bones that I talked about, it plays a role in helping keep our core stable. Basically, we've all heard of core stability. Well, the pelvic floor is a really key player that gets left out of that conversation. And it also obviously plays a role in our sexual response. So another really important job, and the pelvic floor. So if we think of this as being our breathing diaphragm, and this is the pelvic floor, every breath we take, there's a synergistic relationship that happens with the pelvic floor and the diaphragm. So when we inhale, the diaphragm lowers down, pulls air into the body, and it needs the abdomen and the pelvic floor to relax. And then when we exhale, the pelvic floor contracts and helps expel the air. So this is kind of happening all day long, and it acts like a bit of a sump pump. So those are all the jobs of the pelvic floor. And that's a component of pelvic health. So we also have vaginal health. So the actual tissues in the vagina, the tissues around the bladder, the urethra, constipations, or our elimination habits, like toilet habits, would all also fall under pelvic health. So it's kind of, it's not just about Kegels. And I think when people think of pelvic floor or pelvic health, they might think, oh, I need to do Kegels. And that's kind of what most people have heard about, but it's a much bigger picture than that.
Yes. And like for women, like getting a pap smear, you have a healthy pelvic floor, like you're doing the exercising and the breathing, it makes it much easier, right? Because there's like meningitis, but you know, all these things.
Vaginitis, yeah.
Yes. And that's, so your role, like when I was talking earlier about the intro, your advocate, like it's becoming more mainstream, but there's still work to be done. Right. And So how are you raising awareness? Cause I mean, you've written four books, you're just going, and you're doing so many, you know, worthwhile projects and getting the word out. And
it's interesting because I didn't necessarily you know, growing up, it's not like I had a career aspiration to focus on pelvic health. It sort of happened by accident in and around the time when I was really concerned about my own pelvic floor because I was pregnant and giving birth and knowing my mom had had issues. And so my very first, the very first approach, because back when I started this, which is almost 18 years ago, we didn't have social media. We didn't have Facebook. We didn't, like, none of the social media channels existed. We had websites. So that was one platform. But my first event, I created an event called Kegels and Cocktails. And that was my first, I guess, attempt to try to get the word out in a way that wasn't clinical, that hopefully was going to try to break some of the taboo that would, you know, a cocktail event is usually fun and we socialize and we go with girlfriends and there might be a bit of shopping there. And so that was, and that still to, you know, 13 years later, after I did that, created that event, it still goes on. So I'm happy that that's one thing that has stuck and I continue to do, and I love it. So that's one way. My books have been another, and, you know, writing a book is, again, not something, if I look back, I never had an aspiration to be an author, but I self-published, and I also was approached by a publisher. I've done both, and it's a difficult process, but it's a very rewarding process. And what I like is that it does give me a little bit of clout, but it's also an easy way for people to, you know, if they're afraid of somebody seeing their search on the internet, or, you know, they may not be able, they don't know where to look on the internet. It's an easy way to get a book and have a physical copy of something that they can read privately, that gives them at least a starting point as to who to ask questions, what questions to ask, who would I see, what is pelvic health. So that's my most recent book, Your Pelvic Floor, which is right there. And the internet, obviously, so I have a website, and social media has played a huge role. So again, back in the day when I very first started, it was, you know, I started selling a product on the side for a number of years, and I didn't have a website. And then around 2007, I think I started a website. And then, so I started to do that. Then it was kind of a bit of word of mouth, but then social media started to come on the scene. So there was Twitter, which is one of the first platforms that I used. Then Facebook started to become a bit more business use. And then we had Pinterest and Instagram, and, you know, now it's YouTube and TikTok. I've been using as many of them as I can, because there's different, sometimes there's users on all of them and sometimes there's users on one. So I kind of want to be able to reach as many people as possible where most people are spending their time, which, you know, in an unfortunate way, I guess sometimes it's on social media. So that's a huge role. And then the other is, as I mentioned, word of mouth, but also collaborating and networking with other professionals who work with women who may not be specialized in pelvic health, but who see people with those problems and want somebody to be able to refer their patients or clients to.
Yes. And you are a great resource with four books. I see the book behind you. And also I remember Prepare to Push. That's the one that we talked about earlier, but, you know, it's like, people want to, you know, they may feel embarrassed asking questions. So it's safe. It's a safe place to be if they want to reach out to you or have a book, a copy of the book. And, but I was going to ask you too, and which is like, how early should people know about their pelvic health? Like, you know, mm-hmm. at the age of 12, like how?
Yeah, I would argue yes, because, you know, we teach our kids as parents and as teachers in schools, there is a sexual health curriculum that's taught in schools, and we as parents can play a role in teaching our kids about their bodies. And I argue that we play a role as parents, but also in this school sexual ed curriculum, we could introduce the concept of a pelvic floor and all of the jobs that it has and the differences between male and female anatomy and why females are at increased risk and why they need to pay a bit more attention to that group of muscles. And it's mainly because we go through menstruation. The majority of us do become pregnant and give birth at some point in our life, and we will all go through menopause. So there's hormonal fluctuations, there's biomechanical changes. We again have an additional opening being the vagina. We have an additional organ being the uterus. So and our pelvis is wider. Like, there's lots of things that make us more likely or more at risk of experiencing pelvic floor challenges. And if we were taught at a young age, in a way that was empowering rather than doom and gloom? Because like a lot of times, especially when you're learning later on, you hear about the common symptoms, you hear about this, and you, it feels like this insurmountable battle. And it's usually when you're in the thick of dealing with something. And if we presented it younger, when kids are learning about their bodies, when they're learning about menstruation, when they're learning about sexual wellness, if we presented that we have this amazing powerhouse of muscles that require a little bit of additional attention, and here's the way that we can move in ways and eat in ways and live in ways that fosters that the health of that area. And here's what happens when you go through hormonal fluctuations and menstruation. Here's what's normal. Here's what's not. Here's what happens when you are starting to participate in sexual activity. And then here's the professionals that you would see if you ever have questions or if you have concerns, or for preventive maintenance in a sense. So we go to dentists for our teeth, and we've been told from a young age, brush, floss, see your dentist once or twice a year. And we go there for a checkup, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody knows about a dental checkup. So I believe we should be doing a pelvis checkup as well. And that will allow people to, again, appreciate the importance, but also be able to screen for things like incontinence, like organ prolapse, like painful sex before they become major issues. And I think that could really save a lot of suffering that women go through.
Yes. And I mean, raising awareness and education as well. And so it's like, it's so important, as you said, brushing your teeth, using, you know, it's so important because your pelvic floor changes as we get older, right? And if you're a runner, you have to be careful of that. I'm just saying, because I'm a runner, as you know, but just these and being pregnant. So it does change, right, Kim?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, as I mentioned earlier, we have hormonal fluctuations of being women. And we have, so there's the component of the muscles. So the capacity the muscles have to do their jobs, reacting in the right, with the right timing, reacting with the right amount of force, being able to relax when they need, contract when they need. And then we also have the tissue component, which muscle is tissue, but kind of the lining where we have estrogen receptors. And as we start to get older, we're one, losing collagen, we're losing muscle mass, we're losing testosterone, we're also losing estrogen. And we have a lot of estrogen receptors in the pelvis. And when we are no longer producing it to the same degree, and we no longer have the circulating estrogen that those receptors are looking for, those tissues then start to become a drier. They usually start to thin a little. The walls of the vagina may start to narrow, which can contribute to incontinence, organ prolapse, painful sex. So some of the things that we can be experiencing beforehand, but may become exacerbated or might show up for the first time as we go through that transition. But so much of that is preventable. So again, back to the reasons why we want to introduce this conversation earlier, rather than waiting until we have a problem to overcome. It's never too late. There's lots we can do, but rather than waiting for there to be something that's a problem, how about we, in anticipation that these changes will be happening, how can I mitigate that? How can I keep my tissues healthy? How can I eat in ways that will be supportive of my pelvic health? Local vaginal estrogen, vaginal moisturizers, self-pleasure, sex, whether that's with or without a partner, movement, whole body movement, lots of fiber, lots of water. I can go on. Those are kind of a few key main points that we should be incorporating, I believe, in our daily life and our daily lifestyle and habits to help foster optimal pelvic health as we age. Because it's not just something we need to pay attention to because we are pregnant or because we've given birth. It's really through our whole life.
Yes. And Kim, I'd like to go back to, you know, the schools. Do you think, like, what do you think would be the first step is, you know, to go to the schools or implementing this, you know, the education component, you know, like yourself going to the school and giving a talk or creating a children's book or something, you know, to raise awareness and provide education out there as a resource.
Yeah, there is a, here in Vancouver, there is a great organization called Salima Noon. And Salima Noon is actually a person, but she has created Salima Noon Sexual Wellness Education. And she is in a lot of the schools. And so, you know, discussions with those organizations that are already there about how they can add to their curriculum something to do with pelvic health. So that's something that I am pursuing with a few different organizations and people. And there was the NHS in the UK has made a statement that pelvic health is something that should be taught in school. So I'm hoping, and this was in the last year. I believe it was in the last year. I don't remember the exact date, but I hope that that infiltrates to other countries around the world as well. And then it becomes, again, just part of that curriculum. So whoever or, you know, whatever department or whoever teacher or whatever group they outsource that education component to, hopefully we'll start working with pelvic health professionals to include, and it doesn't have to be a huge, it's not like we're going to add on hours worth of content, but just ways that we can weave in some knowledge about what the pelvic floor is and why it's important and how you can keep care of it, I think would really transform the future for a lot of young women.
Yes. And, you know, Kim, what are some like myths, if you will, like, you know, like misinformation out there?
Mm-hmm. The big one is, that leaking is normal as you age. So a lot of people think that because you're older or because you have given birth before, it's okay. It's normal to leak a little bit of urine, and it's not normal. It's very, very common. It's not normal. It's also very treatable. And it's also, another myth is that it only happens to people who've been pregnant. So people who've never been pregnant or given birth before can also experience incontinence, which is where you leak a little bit of urine with some sort of exertion. It's very common in runners and high intensity exercisers. So it's not normal. It's not something. And if it happens and it doesn't bother you and you're aware that it's treatable and you choose not to do something about it, that's that person's choice. I'm promoting informed choice. So I just want at least the information to be out there and the knowledge to be out there that it is not normal. And then people can choose to seek help or not. Another one would be that Kegels are the, you know, kind of master amazing, most amazing exercise, and they're going to solve all the problems. So most people, if they've heard of something to do with the pelvic floor, it's usually do your Kegels. And we have evidence to support Kegel exercises do work when they're done correctly, when they're done consistently, but they're limited in my opinion. So I use them from a connection perspective to get people connected with the movement and relationship of the pelvic floor and the diaphragm, and to kind of create that mind body patterning that we sometimes lose for various reasons. And then we need to layer it into movement. So the missing component, I believe, with just a prescription of Kegels is we're not training the pelvic floor dynamically. So things like leaking urine or heaviness in the pelvis, that doesn't typically happen while we're laying in bed doing Kegels or while we're sitting at a red light doing Kegels, or, you know, even if we're not doing Kegels, like those things happen when we are exerting some sort of effort, usually while we're exercising or picking up a child or pushing a heavy door open or standing up from a chair. Even during sex, sometimes it can happen to people. So we need to kind of step beyond just a Kegel practice and start to incorporate that control and the relationship of the diaphragm and the pelvic floor into movement. So a whole body approach is what I believe in. So a myth is, again, just Kegels are going to work.
Wonderful. And you know, you have the Puff Muff and you also have a challenge. Tell us about the app. It's an app. So
yeah, the app. So about 4 years ago now, I had always wanted to have some sort of an app, but it was cost prohibitive to create my own. And I met a company who had a platform where they allowed fitness professionals and coaches to create challenges using their app platform. And so I created something called the Buff Muff Challenge, which was a 28-day pelvic floor, kind of whole body pelvic floor fitness program. And it was super successful and people loved it. And I was limited by the fact that this platform I used was only for challenges. And I didn't have anywhere to necessarily send them that gave them the same experience for an ongoing measure. And so there was this other company that came along that also had a platform to create an app that was more accessible to me from a cash outlay perspective. And so I created an app that encompasses the challenge, but all of my other stuff in one place. And And I love it. And people love it too, because it's now on their phone and they don't need to log in anywhere. It's they're right there and they can check in and they have all the videos and the workouts and the exercises and the information. It's right there in their pocket. So yeah, so it's called the Buff Muff app, and it's in Apple and Android.
Thank you. People want to get hold of you. Where can they go? I know socials, right?
Yeah, basically. So vaginacoach.com is my website. And if you put Vagina Coach into any of the different platforms, you'll find me.
That's wonderful. No, thank you, Kim. And
you're welcome.
Best of luck to you for your next book. I'm sure there'll be another book out there.
I don't know.
Joining me is Dr. Bob Weil, and he's back on the show for the Sports Doctor is In segment. He is a respected sports podiatrist and radio host of the Sports Doctor. And we're always excited to have him back on the show. And this month's topic, we're talking about common running injuries. And it's live from Chicago or from Vancouver, Canada. Welcome back, Dr. Bob.
Hey, from one country to the other. Always good to be with you. And again, to discuss some of these really common challenges and questions. And one of the most common ones are the running related, usually overuse injuries. So first of all, I want to just give a little bit difference. You know, there are two types of injuries. One is acute, like you stepped in a hole, you sprained an ankle, you were injured, it just happened. Overuse injury is a different animal. Most people can't remember. I don't remember when my shin started hurting me. There wasn't any specific incident. Usually, again, it's from overuse. So we want to list some of the common overuse injuries and what to pay attention to.
Thanks for watching. If you have a question or comment about today's episode, go to our website, which is runwithit.ca. Until next time, run with it. Run With It is sponsored by the BC Sports Hall of Fame, Mallory's Fashion Network, Kim Votney, Pelvic Health Specialist, and Kraft Hair Academy.